Welcome to the Mindset Evolution podcast, powered by Self-Recoding, world-class consulting and coaching services that you can access at selfrecoding.com. Self-Recoding is a unique blend of neurohealing modalities that will empower you to reach your full potential. Join thousands of others who have experienced rapid results in their journey of personal growth. Now enjoy our show where we bring you tools for a powerful mind with your hosts, Cathy Tate and Daisy Papp.
And hello everybody and welcome back to another episode of the Mindset Evolution podcast. We are your hosts, Bald and Blonde, Cathy Tate, that's me, and Daisy Papp. Welcome to the show. Hi, Daisy.
Hello, hello, and welcome everyone who sees us and everyone who listens to us. What's up your sleeves today?
Up my sleeves. It's a good one. You're going to like this one. I'm asking a question today that we're going to discuss. Are our brains biased?
The short answer is yes. So, yes, okay, we're done with the recording. I can go about my evening.
Okay, let's start with the word biased, I think, because we have people from all around the world and we need to be clear about what we're talking about. To you, the word biased would mean what, Daisy?
To me, it would mean that it appears as if there was a decision already made. So before really thinking about it, it's prejudice to me, which is a very healthy thing because, for example, when I open my fridge and I'm really hungry, but there's some really moldy food in there, then I'm glad that I'm prejudiced. Yeah, I have prejudice towards the ugly look of my food, so I wouldn't eat it. Nothing wrong about that. The question is, how do we use it? And I think the same is with the brain, that it is good that we have biased brains because it helped our species to survive. By no means am I a neurobiologist. By no means am I a brain researcher. But I learned a little bit about it because it's part of my interest and I'm very curious. And the biased brains, for example, when we go really back in evolution, and for example, there's a German saying where they say what the farmer doesn't know, he won't eat it. So that refers to back in evolution that what is unfamiliar could be dangerous. And therefore, we rather go with what's familiar.
Oh, I see. So our brain's got like this default protective setting. And it comes from when it was still fight or flight and it was still life or death. And that's our ancient brain. Is that what you mean? That part still lingers?
Yeah, we all do have a reptilian brain. We all do have it. It's also called the brain stem. It's there here in the neck when it's, get and jump and be scared and be fearful. I think it is interesting to me that it helped our species to survive. And therefore, it is a survival mechanism that the brain is biased. Now, what we do with it, and today's world, things can still be considered, and it happens around the world where it is really about life or death, or it is considered or perceived as life or death, or it is really fight or flight. So our reptilian brains, only because we evolved in years, so that we're in the 21st century, doesn't mean that we no longer have a reptilian brain. I see and meet a lot of reptilian brainers who don't have access to their other higher levels and parts and pieces of their brains, the rational thinking, the logical thinking, the creative thinking, or even the left frontal lobe, which is the home of the genius and really good things can go on there. Now, while we are in reptilian mode, then we are not really able to handle any situation logically or rationally. What we do, then we fall back to childhood behavior. So before that happens, so let's say you tell me something, oh, this happened to the dog. And if I have past experience that can relate to that, what you're sharing with me, let's say I have a similar experience in my past or I heard of someone, then I have a connection that I can make. And then I'm tending to project what happened in the story that I remember of. That is what happened in your story. That's also part of bias, I think. And it's also that we fall back into childhood behavior. So for example, when you ask me something, Daisy, but did you do that? Whatever. Did you send me the file? And I tell you, no, of course I didn't. I couldn't do it. So that's the defense mechanism. When that doesn't work, then I fall maybe back into childhood behavior and throw a temper tantrum. Wah! And then if that doesn't work, then we shock freeze. So faint. That's another one. So that some people do that very elegantly while they're still fully conscious by just taking 200 steps back and giving you the silent treatment. May sound familiar to one or the other of our listeners. It is good to have a biased brain. The question is, what do we do with it? Because when I use it every single day and it holds me back and doesn't support me, but holds me back. For example, oh, Daisy, would you like to try out the paddleboard? Tomorrow will be nice weather. No, I can't because tomorrow is the third of the month and on thirds, I cannot do paddleboarding, let's say. If I have that superstition. Many people have many superstitions. And we oftentimes have them without even being aware of having them because then they don't fall in the obvious category of superstition.
Yeah, I think they can be quite subtle. Especially, you know, if you've picked them up just being, because maybe it's one in your family or your culture and you've lived with it your whole life without really considering it in detail. It's just something that your family believes. Okay, so that's what I mean by subtle. And I think at some point in our lives, it can be a good idea to sit back and go, let's actually have a look at those beliefs and where they come from and whether they serve me right now. Mm-hmm. Or are they getting in the way of me progressing, perhaps?
I think taking an inventory in many aspects of our lives, if not all, is a good idea to do from time to time. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is interesting because we have spoken in the past a few times about the reptilian brain and how it is there because of, I guess, the survival instinct that we are built with as human beings. And then we go, okay, well, in today's world, what does that mean? Certainly, I'm not discounting that there are people out there in life or death situations.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure that there are. And that is when you really do need this part of your brain to help you live through them. But in everyday normal life, when let's just say you're having casual conversations, in that scenario, I think that it can get in our way. And I'm going to give an example to illustrate that because I think that helps everyone understand it. So I'm actually house hunting right now. I'm moving in the next couple of months, not that far, just an hour away out of the city to more of a beachside community where I can be near my family. I'm very excited about it. And in Australia right now, the housing market is quite tight in that it is more difficult than it has been at times to get housing because there's a very high demand and a lot of people are looking for something that's suitable and that's affordable because we are also feeling money pressure over here as well. So there's a lot of people going and inspecting. And so when you talk about it to somebody, oh, I'm house hunting, need to move, and their automatic reaction, it seems to me, not just on this subject either, but on lots of things, seems to be in the negative. It's, oh, it's a bad time right now and, oh, that's going to take ages or, oh, I hated it when I had to do that because it was so frustrating or things like that, which to me were very negative and not very supportive of what I'm trying to embark on because I know it's challenging right now and I, having learned all the things I've learned, use my mindset to overcome that and look at it in an entirely different way so that I can succeed in my hunt. This is how I've done this a lot. So I believe I've got my own little system down pat for beating the market because I think about it differently. And that may sound a bit loony, but it works for me. And so that's a good example of how people automatically come back in the negative. Now, maybe that comes from a place of worry or fear, or just maybe it's more that in society now, we're a little bit conditioned to thinking of the negatives all the time. So I thought that'd be an interesting thing to talk about, because I think that probably a lot of people out there experience it or even do it.
Yeah, there are two things. I think it is a good idea to have a look at the difference between danger and fear, because danger is very real, but fear is something that we can control. And the other thing is to observe that some people have a style of showing empathy with negativity. It's a question of style. When you come to me with that concern, like, oh yeah, I'm going house hunting now, I said, well, good luck with that. That's one thing that I could say. I could say, oh, that's horrible. Oh, I remember my great-grandmother's neighbors had to move, and it was so... That's my alignment and projecting then on you based on my reconstruction of memory that I didn't even live through, but storytelling dropped down or drizzled down to me, to my generation. And then there is another part that I think is important to note, that during the evolution of our species, the one who saw the danger first had greater chances to survive.
So the one who sees the danger first is the most likely to survive.
Yeah, let's think about it in today's world. You're driving in your car or you're walking on the street and you see a tree is falling. The one who sees it first or sees that it's dangerous and acknowledges it has greater chances to survive than the one who's, oh no, it's just a tree. And then boom, it falls. That is something that we're born with, and I think it is a good thing. The question is, how do we utilize it?
Or when?
Or when, yes. Is it timely? Is it supportive? But then, again, it depends on the emotional home. Let me explain that a little bit. I do not remember how it's called. I do believe it's called Tumblr. These little wooden dolls that had sand in the bottom, and when you pushed it, then it would wiggle waggle a little bit.
Oh, but stay upright.
Yes.
Yes, I had one of those.
Yeah. So some people have their emotional home. Okay, there comes the big storm and off they go. But then they come back into their contentedness or in their, let's say, natural state of harmony to a degree. And then there are people, when you look at it as if there was sand in the bottom, that their figure is more to the side, tilted to the side, and that sand got settled the same way. So they may have a happy moment for a moment, and then tuck, they go back into their emotional home. Now, the good news is that the emotional home is not permanent. It can be changed through practice, practicing the good things, because I believe that maybe we are born with a tendency, but I cannot imagine that anyone is born with a negative emotional state as their emotional home. Because when I look at children at the playground, I sometimes like to observe them because their curiosity is just so beautiful and so inspiring to me. And then it reminds me of, oh, one day I was just like them and wanted to see everything. And, oh, what's this? And then sometimes they taste it. I'm not really into that when they pick up things from the ground and put it in their mouth. But they want to figure out what's the texture, what's the taste, and is it edible or is it something nice or not? And I think that, for example, as a mother, when we look at children or we look at our children, let's say when my child was still a baby or very young, I was biased too, based on what I was conditioned to, on what my parents were biased by. No, this is not how we do it. So then when I see it elsewhere, no, no, this is not how we do it. That's the bias. Or for example, a color. Let's say I like a specific color that you don't like for any reason. And maybe you don't like the color. I'm not making this as a status quo. This is an example. But let's say maybe you liked that color when you were little and then you were drawing something beautiful and maybe someone told you, no, no, this is not the color that we use there. I don't know. Maybe you don't even remember. Most likely you won't. But there are so many things that are stored in the unconscious that create our bias. Now, I think it's a good idea to have a look at it and question it more often than not, instead of living the rest of your life with all the biases that you inherited, got accustomed to, got conditioned to, or just maybe copycat from somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think we can use it to advantage too. And this is what I feel like I've done with my little house hunting system. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I take my natural sort of reactions that are negative about how difficult it might be or how challenging this part is or all the things you've got to do to be able to even get to the point of applying, let alone finding something affordable in the right area, available, and then there's 50 people wanting it. So it is can be overwhelming if you look at all the challenges around it. But I like to come at it from the opposite direction. But knowing about the challenges, I think then you're much more equipped to combat them or to use them to your advantage. And so I do things like I do a lot of vision work around where I want to live and how I'll feel if this house I see is the right one for me and I can see myself living there. I'll do lots of meditative vision work around that. I usually come at it from a practical side to make myself look like the best applicant they could possibly have.
And absolutely.
And then I offer more than they're asking. Just a little bit, maybe $10 or $20. And that method of doing it that way has worked, I'm going to say, 85% of the time. And so I haven't had such a stressful experience. And I've got to say, I've done this probably 40 times. How many houses?
Incredible.
Crazy amount, more than the average. And so I know what I'm talking about because I've done it in more than one state and in more than one country. So there you go.
Well, I think it's a good idea that you put yourself in a good state first. Because let's say I'm going there, I'm the applicant and but it's so difficult and now it will never happen. Oh no, and this is so much paperwork and how am I going to get there? And oh, this is so stressful. Then in the meantime, I beat myself up while I'm driving in the car to the appointment. And then I'm not in a very good mood and maybe I'm not the friendliest of all on the planet. So I think it's a good idea to put ourselves in a good state because no matter you get the house or you don't get the house, in your case, this is not about life or death. It's not like your house is destroyed and you cannot live there anymore. You can stay there if it doesn't work to that point in time when you want or envision it to happen that you're moving. So it's a different situation. Nevertheless, when I see people who were able to endure and overcome outstanding challenges, most of them were able to do the internal work first and put themselves in a better state. Attitude is a huge undervalued currency. And I think that when we put ourselves in a better attitude or we make that as our emotional home, then our life will be very different. And also when I'm in a different state of mind, it is much easier for me to see opportunity instead of challenges, because wherever my focus goes, everything grows.
Yes, I think that's probably the theory I try and operate from most. Maybe theory is not the right word, but the mindset, I think it's a mindset.
And you practice it, because that is when we look at those who to every solution or to every situation have a problem, they practice very well and very frequently. And that's why they're so good at it.
Yes. And we have spoken about that in several episodes too. Quite right.
Yes.
But a quick point, episode 133 on attitude, worth a listen because it fits very well with this conversation if you haven't heard it yet. But yeah, I think that certainly it's more important in life or death situations that we have this bias and that we use it to our advantage. I really wanted to have this conversation today because I think that there's a global climate that is quite challenging right now, and we need to have the tools to face that and move through it, because it can be very scary, the things happening all around the place. no matter where you live, there's probably going to be some impact on you from world events that are completely outside our control as individuals. Yeah. And I know that's a climate for fearfulness. And I truly believe that we can push through that fear and change things if, as individuals, we can look to be part of the solution and change it locally. We need to start with our families and start with our communities and just stop going along with what else is happening.
I'd say even one step beyond that or prior to that, start with self. Everyone we have interaction with, in one way or the other, we impact them. Sometimes it's unnoticeable. Sometimes it's more noticeable. But again, when I'm in a good state, then I think it is more fun to record an episode with me than if I would be in a very grumpy state. No, yes, no, I don't care. So what kind of episodes would we have? I put myself in a good state even before I work with clients, very consciously, so that I can deliver the best value and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Over-deliver.
I just want to go back to what you said about we all impact each other, whether we know it or not.
Yeah.
I think it's really important that, because actually I think we often have a giant impact on people and are completely unaware of it.
Yes, that's also happening. And sometimes we think we make a great impact on someone and it's unnoticed. I think also in energies, the things that we cannot measure, maybe some scientists can measure. And I've seen some really nice gadgets where you can measure all sorts of energies and can see it on screens, what's happening. And that is very real. Only because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not there. And when we look at some of geniuses that were living before us or walked on Earth before me, they had great ideas when it came to frequency and energy. And again, I'm radiating a specific energy. Why? Not because I want to, but I cannot stop it either. The electromagnetic field of the heart is this big, like 3 meters in diameter, 360. It's like a bubble. Now, no one can tell me that if someone with, let's say, a really bad mood comes close to me within my bubble, that it's not affecting my bubble. When every one of us puts themselves into a peaceful state of mind, I can be upset. Of course, I'm upset sometimes. That's absolutely normal and natural and humane. But how long do I stay there? Now, some people are so biased, it appears to me sometimes that they not only were very biased in specific aspects, but they stayed there in that extreme of fear-mongering, and then that's what they pay forward. Now, bless their hearts, because they're great teachers for me. For example, that's how I see it, to my mind and not theirs.
Yep. Great point, Daisy. Back to self first. And I really would like to do a Salon Talk episode on that electromagnetic field.
Absolutely.
Look out for that one, guys. We'll put that one on the list. I think that will be a really good episode. Yeah, I think that's been very interesting today. Have you got anything that you want to close out with, Daisy?
No, I think it is important that we are aware that our brains are biased. And we can shift from being really fear-mongered and super fearful about everything and anything. And we can also learn how to distinguish that from dangerous situations. And once we practice that, I think we can become less brain biased or less biased, that I think it is a good idea to take control of what we can take control of and become masters of our minds and be brain users and not only brain owners.
Great way to put it, Daisy. Thank you. And thank you, as always, to our major sponsor, selfrecoding.com. Please go visit them and also visit us, baldandblonde.live. We want to hear from you. And we'd love your support. So please pop over to the website baldandblonde.live and let us know how you're enjoying the episodes. And if you've got a topic idea, yeah, please let us know. We're always interested in what our audience thinks. That's it from us today. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Mindset Evolution Podcast. We are Bald and Blonde.
Talk to you next time.
Oh, sorry, I stole your bit.
Thank you for listening in to the Bald and Blonde Mindset Evolution Podcast. Please share our show with your family and friends. Together, we make this world a better place for you, for us, for future generations. When you need consulting or coaching, visit selfrecoding.com. Also, please remember to rate us 5 stars and leave a review and support us at baldandblonde.live. Talk to you soon.